RFK Jr. has absolutely destroyed the internet this week with his testimony in front of the Congressional Health and Human Services Committee. It was an extremely spicy testimony that he gave with a lot of fiery back and forth. We're going to go through all of the hit clips that happened during that testimony and get into all the ramifications of all of it. I'm here with David Rand. My name is Joe Sheehan. This is Human Reaction. Thanks for joining us. David, let's jump right in. What's our first clip?
Jump right in. I called this one Chronic Disease. This is like a clips episode. It's like a straight up reaction.
This morning, I got the latest numbers from CDC that 76.4% of Americans now have a chronic disease. This is stunning. When my uncle was president, it was 11%. 1950, it was 3%. They had 76.4%. 8 out of 10 of our kids cannot qualify for military service. This is a national security issue. When my uncle was president, we spent zero on chronic disease. Today, we spend $1.3 trillion. It's the biggest cause, and it's increasing. And all of the arguments that Republicans and Democrats have about single-payer Obamacare or the various ways of allocating the health dollars, they're all like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. If we don't end this chronic disease, we are the sickest country in the world. That's why we have to fire people at CDC. They did not do their job. This was their job to keep us healthy.
Thank you.
And I need to fire some of those people to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, so the backdrop of this is there was a bunch of firings that happened last week. I don't know if he was scheduled for this and then the firings happened to set him up, you know, to make him look bad right before this, or if the firings happened, they're like, come before us, you can't fire people. Yeah, so anyways.
That's a good question. Yeah, but with that backdrop, obviously, he's here to defend himself. All of the Democratic senators, I think primarily, although both sides of the aisle, I think to a degree, are really adversarial here, and they're really calling him on the carpet because the last time he was in front of this committee was when he was being confirmed. Mm-hmm. He made all those promises to Bennett, Representative Bennett, not our Bennett. Not our Bennett. In the backroom dealings, he made all these promises that he wouldn't touch the vaccine schedule and all this stuff, and now he's just like eviscerating it in a lot of ways that I think are good because it's really just offering choice, and he's bringing in, he's running a lot of studies that will be independent, that will be hopefully honest and give American people the truth about the effects that vaccines have on children and all that stuff. And obviously here he's talking more so about the chronic disease epidemic, which I think is equally important.
Yeah. But it was in a big part of this hearing too.
Huge part of it. Absolutely. But I think he's exactly right. If these people had done their jobs, he wouldn't have been elected or confirmed to this position.
Yes. Yes. And not just that, it's just the moment of low institutional trust that we're at right now. And I think the Democrats look ridiculous. Like, how could you fire the people who screwed up COVID so bad? You know, how could you fire the people who obviously have so many problems that we are in the position we're at now? Like, how could you, RFK Jr.? Yeah. It just plays flat to me. I don't think it's worked.
Totally. I mean, really, what it looks like to me is that he is chopping off tentacles of the deep state octopus that lives within the health apparatus of our country, right? Within the government. And it's reeling. They're pissed off. And all the pharma lobby is highly, highly inflamed because they make a ton of money off of chronic disease. People with heart disease or, you know, high cholesterol or whatever, they've got all these drugs they can sell them.
Statins.
As soon as we are a healthy nation, they're not making money and they're paying the majority of these people on this panel a lot of money.
Great point. So next we got on autism data. This was, I think, a bombshell. This one was big.
I'll just tell you one example, and I could sit here and give you thousands. But in 2002, CDC did an internal study of Atlanta, Fulton County, Georgia children, and looked at children who got the MMR vaccine on time and compared those to kids who got them later. So in other words, kids who got them before 36 months and kids who got them afterward. The data from that study showed that black boys who got the vaccine on time had a 260% greater chance of getting an autism diagnosis than children who waited. The chief scientist on that, Dr. William Thompson, the senior said, vaccine safety scientist at CDC, was ordered to come into a room with four other co-authors by his boss, Frank DiStefano, who's the head of the immunization safety branch, and ordered to destroy that data. And then they published it without that fact. So you know that story. I know that story. And you know of hundreds of stories like that. It happens all the time. We are being lied to by these agencies, and we're going to change that right now.
Ooh, that's a revelation.
That's news.
Yeah.
Right there.
I mean, and that's apparently an older story I just wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
But the idea that your science, your progressive scientific management class, who are supposed to be neutral, like it was all sold to the American people that if you just put smart people in charge, like this is Woodrow Wilson, progressive era stuff. If you just put smart people in charge, that they have the science of the state that would be able to value and neutral free just for the benefit of the society manage us. What they didn't calculate is that they would be like, yeah, you plebs, you really need vaccines. Also, you know, maybe it's greasing the skids a little bit with some dollars.
Yeah, just
on
maybe
the side. But maybe even there's like, well, it's worth it. But we can't let people know the truth of why we're taking this calculus because you're too dumb to know. We're the smart ones who really know what you need to do. And so we'll lie to you.
Yeah.
And destroy data. That's insane.
Oh, yeah.
For a scientific organization.
I mean, totally. But for those of us that lived through COVID, yeah, which is all of us, we saw this happen time and time again where data would be withheld because they didn't want to inspire vaccine hesitancy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, hold on a second. If you're withholding data that would make me hesitant to take a particular medical treatment, then maybe there is a reason for me to be hesitant.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, there are a lot of historical examples, the one he just pointed out in particular, of reasons to be hesitant.
Yes.
So the question then becomes, what is the motivation for the state-funded scientists to try to force these therapies on the American public? And again, it comes back to the money.
Right.
They're all being paid by pharma.
Yeah. And you know, and it's the campaign finance, but it's also, it's the larger, more difficult picture, right, of public health in the philosophy of public health that informs them, right? They have to lie to themselves. They can't just say, well, I mean, I'm getting money from them, so I'm gonna lie, right? It's the ability to self-deceive yourself because the ends justify the means.
But what is the end?
Public health. I mean, if you really believe that MMR is really important to keep the next measles outbreak from happening, then you might just, you know, fudge the numbers or destroy them outright.
Well, I agree, and I think there's the, like,
I mean, it's both. I'm not just trying to say that to disqualify. I'm just saying.
No, but I agree, and I think there's an underlying layer of safetyism that exists in there.
Yes.
That we can protect ourselves from everything because we're so smart, and we can figure out a therapy to rid ourselves of measles and whatever else without examining the actual threat that disease poses to humanity.
Right.
Like, what happened? What was up with measles before, you know, we had a vaccine? What happens to kids when they get measles? Like, the vast majority of them get sick and they get over it.
Right.
Like, that's the example that we have.
And we have, like, nicer hospitals now that probably handle the other edge cases, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of evidence to suggest, and I don't have studies in front of me, you know, I'm not an epidemiologist, so just to put that disclaimer out there, that, you know, a lot of the reasons that disease was so rampant in prior eras was more to do with sanitation and clean water and other things that we've solved with you know, the progress of our civilization, mm-hmm, just getting better.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, were vaccines like really the thing that changed the game on any of the, you know, the rampant, you know, outbreaks of measles or anything else? I don't think the evidence is really there. And even if it's true, what is the cost benefit?
Exactly. And so the two parts of that I think are really important to dive into the philosophy that underlies all this, that informs it, that conservatives have to grapple with. It's this idea that you can know what the right thing is for society and navigate the trade-offs for us. That was right. The real progressive error,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is this idea that it can be neutral, that there's an objectively right choice that can be derived at without values. And that's not true. Human beings operate by values intrinsically. We have to ordinarily rank what our values are and what we care about. And if the, and then what's going to bump that rank order value of liberty and transparency from point two, from, you know, rank number two to rank number one, therefore I destroy the thing, might be a little bit of money.
Right.
It might be a philosophy that says you're the empowered person out to protect America. You know, the one thing I disagree with his first statement on is health doesn't come from the state, right?
Yeah.
You know, health comes from our civil society,
yeah,
our technology, the things that come out of that. The best we can hope for is to fund value neutral studies that are hard to fund through private dollars so that we can, you know better. I'll take that case. But you're still looking at, like, where does the actual health come from? It has to happen by free people owning their own lives and making decisions for themselves to make themselves healthy.
Yeah.
And you can't do that if you're being told the food pyramid's how you should eat and, like, all this propaganda, all this bullshit coming from the government.
Right, right. I guess a question that I have around this, and I would love your input on this, David, is scientific research, these studies are very expensive and they have to be funded in some way. Mm-hmm. Someone giving that money probably has their own set of values, their own ordinal rank of importance. And if they're giving that money to a particular researcher or a lab or a university or whatever, they may intrinsically want a certain outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens when they don't get that from that researcher? They get research back, they get results from the study back that contradict their preferred outcome.
Right.
They don't give money again, right? Mm-hmm. That's sort of the politicization of science as we see it, right? Is like this money is coming sort of with strings attached. If you get this grant to do this study and we don't like the results, we're not going to fund you again, is sort of the threat.
Yeah.
So you better give us the results that we want. Well, what are the results that you want? And then of course you have the outright, you know, coercion of the situation where they make you come into a room and destroy, you know, the results of the study that, yes, that would say that no, we should not be giving vaccines to these boys in Fulton County, Georgia at this particular time. Doesn't necessarily mean we shouldn't give them to them at all, but just not at this certain time.
Mm-hmm.
So how are scientists, researchers, labs, universities to grapple with the issue of needing funding and not potentially getting that funding if they offer a different result than is desired?
It's always that challenge, and it's kind of highlighted by what you pointed before, is that society can't be experimented on with a control variable. Right, you don't know if it's cleanliness that changed our disease outbreak and how deadly they were and all that kind of stuff, or you know it's the vaccines. It's impossible to know.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so if you have a central figure that says we're the experts, we actually know, then you disrupt that natural skepticism that should happen in science, and that's why centralizing it in the state is a suboptimal solution. Now, to tackle your question head on, what is the free society solution to that? What's the alternative vision? The alternative vision to me is if you don't have a giant state apparatus that is the arbiter of truth, then what you have is a competing network of truth, you know, finding of truth that would then work to publish things that are outside of that. For example, it's the government that stigmatized, you know, the autism research. The alternative autism research. It's the government that said, hey, if you're skeptical of this and you want to send your kid to public school, sorry, you can't. You know, until the 1990s and the 2000s, when we finally started to create religious exemptions of vaccines. For a long time there, it was mandatory because the government said so. So if we didn't have any of those systems, we wouldn't, one, I don't think we'd be in the situation we're in the first place, right? We wouldn't have had the food pyramid. We wouldn't have had all the vaccine push using coercion that we would have had. And two, as these anecdotal stories are boiling up, there's more openness because there isn't a centralized figure suppressing them and saying that you're, you know, a bigot or whatever for not supporting the science.
Yeah.
And then lastly,
there,
imagine how much more wealthy we'd be as a society if we didn't have a giant government, if we were just a regular country with a regular budget that's balanced, and how much more money there would be just, you know, like for people to give to foundations to conduct studies on important issues that are important to people, right? Like you would have to persuade people it was important. Oh my God, you wouldn't be able to fund it by coercion, but it would probably still get funded because it's valuable, because knowledge is valuable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have a hard time imagining there wouldn't be a market for it.
Yeah. No,
right?
I think
would it
right.
be a nonprofit market? Yeah. Would you incentivize that nonprofit market for good science with a 501c3 status that's tax-free? Maybe you would. I could deal with that. I'm even willing to compromise and say, like, there's a long way to the road of liberty there. There's many steps in between I'll compromise on. One of them being, if we're going to have a CDC, let it do, like, real science. You know, let it, like, put out new, you know, actual, you know, data for the public to assess for themselves with actual, like, bounds on it to make sure it's not trying to get the solution that's best for the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, and that's the piece that I don't know that we're going to go all the way into today, but, you know, there are tables of the amount of money that a lot of the people on this committee are getting from pharma. At the top of the list, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, you know, are getting tens of millions of dollars from a variety of pharma and medical organizations, you know, nursing associations and outright pharma companies and hospital, you know, organizations and other groups that are highly incentivized by the profit that is produced by sick people to give money to these people who make policy. And so, I mean, I don't know. I think you're exactly right. I think the problem is the fact that we have people in a position of power who can make policy that requires certain medical treatments to be, you know, disseminated to the entire American public for going to school, for example. Like, that's just insane to me.
Yes. Yeah. So, and we're going to get back around to Elizabeth Warren. I got a good clip for her. But the next up, I do want to do another one on the myocarditis and VAERS.
Ooh.
Yeah.
My committee's got now over 8 million pages of information just in the first tranche, by the way. What we discovered is that CDC, somebody in the federal health agencies, is interagency communication, hid the signal. They admitted there was a signal on myocarditis, and they hid it. They didn't warn the public. They didn't warn doctors. So that's just one instance of corruption and lies told by the CDC. We've got a lot of others we'll be rolling out, okay? So we held our first hearing in front of a subcommittee investigation on that hiding of the signal of myocarditis. We've heard a lot of studies. Okay, as I've looked into science, it's been thoroughly corrupted. Here's data, and I'd like to enter this sheet into the record. I've been publishing this chart for, you know, since really early 2021, when I'm on, for example, talk radio shows, and they talk about this, they get deplatformed, or they were, you know, because all the censorship during the Biden administration. Here's the facts. The VAERS system that was touted in October of 2020, this great safety surveillance system on COVID. A few months later, when they didn't like the results, they started denigrating their own system. But VAERS shows that there have been 38,742 deaths reported on VAERS worldwide associated with the COVID vaccine. 38,742. 9,252 of those deaths occurred on the day of vaccination within 1 or 2 days. Again, I agree with you. Nobody knows how many COVID deaths were because the information was completely corrupted. Nobody knows how many lives were saved by the COVID. Again, I think most people, okay, if you're vulnerable, raise your antibodies, reverse severity, fine. There's not any good study on that. There's just information out there, just claims being made. This is hard evidence.
Yeah, 9,000 people died the day after or the day of myocarditis.
That's wild. Insane. I have an anecdote around this.
Really?
Yeah. I was taking someone to a vaccination location, and I was very resistant to them getting it, and I voiced those resistance, my concerns. And when we pulled into the parking lot, an ambulance had just pulled up. And there was a guy collapsed as he walked out of the vaccination station.
Whoa.
On his back. And the paramedics were treating him. They put him in the ambulance and they took him away. I have no idea what happened to him.
Yeah.
But in that moment that we walked up, there was an adverse event happening in front of us.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah. And there's another interesting component to this too, you know, because the way that I understand they've skewed the data around adverse events regarding the COVID jab is that they don't consider a person fully vaccinated until like some amount of time after the second dose. So if you get the first dose and you have an adverse event and you die, you're considered unvaccinated.
that's ridiculous.
It's insane.
That makes no sense. Yeah.
It's insane. It's incredibly corrupt.
Huh. I mean, note just like how ridiculous it is that the companies that produce the vaccine aren't liable for those.
Oh, I can't even believe
that's another argument for the free society angle of this. It's like the liability shield is only possible because of a federal laws that have overwhelmed a long tradition, thousands of years of tradition in the West to say if you injure someone with your product, you are liable from it. If it's an unintended effect of the product.
But David, if they weren't immune, then they couldn't, you know, they couldn't get all this life-saving medical treatment out to the American public.
That's the thing that drives me crazy, is because then you would have the reason to have a study that you would then tell the person there are risks associated with this, and they would have to be fully consenting adults who know the risks. I don't have a problem with someone saying, I know the risks. I'm an old person who really needs this because I'm afraid of COVID, versus I was told that it was perfectly safe.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And especially given the fact that we're only finding out in 2025, 5 years later, that a bunch of people died the day of.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't really understand why. You know, that's the crazy thing. It's like if the mRNA technology was undercooked and we don't really understand what it does, in a liability system, you're then like, we need to keep testing this to make sure that we understand the underlying biological markers that would make this safe or unsafe. You would have a reason to pursue that. But as long as you have a system, a progressive system that is top down and done for your benefit, not by your volition, the more you have the incentive to create systems that just lie to you and just say for your own benefit, this is what's going to happen. And the more that we're going to get, you're just a guinea pig.
Yeah.
You're just a test subject in this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy we've allowed it to get to this point.
100%. So we got this one lit me up. I did not know this one on teachers unions.
Ooh.
And the recommendations for schools.
The CDC allowed the teachers union to write the order closing our schools, which hurt working people all over the country, and then pretend it was science-based. The CDC allowed the...
Play that again.
You almost can't believe it.
Teachers union... to write the order closing our schools, which hurt working people all over the country, and then pretend it was science-based.
Whoo! That's nuts! The teachers' union
wrote the rules about closing schools.
Yeah!
Because they were afraid of COVID, and they didn't want to come to school.
Yeah! To protect their employees. Not the kids! The employees, of course. We've known this forever now. I mean, it's long. I mean, speculated, but I feel like I've known this forever, you know?
Well, from other contexts as well, the teachers' unions are not there to benefit the students. They're there to benefit their constituents, which are the teachers.
By definition. That's what they're there to do. And they claim they're there. They got to protect our kids and all that stuff. But think about it. I mean, Randy Weingarten, the teachers' union president, was outside protesting this, saying, protect our children. Our, not yours. They're my kids, not your kids. You're just teaching them. You're a service provider, lady.
Yeah.
You know, it's and just the moment of like total capture by a union interest to say we're going to shut down all the schools under the name of science is so crazy to me. Like it's a Democrat nightmare. It's like the worst thing that could happen if you have a Democrat be the administrator.
100%. And then you look at the results of what happened when schools were closed. I mean, obviously, the impact on parents was tremendous because they had to figure out what to do with their kids. Mm-hmm. And then the learning delays that existed, the fact that kids had to wear masks to school, mm-hmm. you know, for especially young kids, delayed language development. It delayed like social cue development because they couldn't see each other's faces. Mm-hmm. Like there were all of these downstream effects that were, you know, not considered in that decision. Who's to say if, you know, a scientist, a CDC scientist were to be making that determination, they would make a different one. Mm-hmm. But certainly a teacher is not considering any of that.
Well, I mean, like, okay, I'm not an epidemiologist either, but I'm smart enough that I could look at the rate of death of children and the rate of death of obese children as opposed to the regular population. Look at my kid and says, is my kid obese? No. I think they should go to school because the likelihood is very, 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 very low. You know, 0.01% or I remember it just being absurdly low.
Oh, it's insanely low.
And basically thinking like, this is no higher than if he had the cold. You know, like the rates were similar to like influenza.
Yeah.
And so I could make that determination, but the teacher with the PhD in teaching, you know, got to make the call to say, let's shut down the schools under the justification that's for the kids. Yeah. It was insane to me from the very beginning. And it's refreshing to see it actually come to light that it was just a political decision, just a decision to signal how committed we were. It's like the worst kind of communitarian output too, right? We are so together in this. We're going to close all the schools. It's like, that doesn't make us together. That means you're looking out for your interests using your allies in government.
Yes.
You know, and this section, this next one on politicalization is just delicious. It is so good because it's just how I feel just put into words.
Do you believe COVID-19 was politicized?
Yeah, the whole process was politicized. Senator, I mean, we were lied to about everything. We were lied to about natural immunity. We were lied to about, you know, we were told again and again the vaccines would prevent transmission, they'd prevent infection. It wasn't true. They knew it from the start. It wasn't true because that's what the animal studies and the clinical trials showed. We were told that there was science behind cloth masks. The CDC allowed the teachers' union to write the order closing our schools, which hurt working people all over the country, and then pretend it was science-based. All of these issues, and then I can show you, like, for example, Chairman Wyden was talking about me politicizing ACIP. During COVID, probably the most famous scientist on ACIP was Martin Kulldor from Harvard, the great, renowned, world-renowned epidemiologist and vaccinologist. And he criticized the COVID booster mandates. They ejected him from COVID because he wasn't in the orthodoxy. The two biggest health officials at FDA during COVID, Dr. Gruber and Dr. Krause, criticized the Biden mandates, vaccine mandates. You know, President Biden said in August, I would never take that vaccine, the Trump vaccine. And he came in, he mandated it, and then he fired the two top health officials at FDA who said, hey, this thing has not been properly tested. So the whole process was politicized, and even today.
So let me, I'm 15.
Do you remember the top two FDA officials being fired under Biden?
I don't.
I don't either, mainstream media. That seems like it would be an important thing to note, especially after Biden's flip from that's a Trump vaccine to that. Like, it is such a failure of the mainstream media to hold Biden to any account whatsoever for 4 years. That is one of the biggest travesties of this, to just gloss right over that. And to have the chutzpah to make a big deal of RFK firing some people at CDC at this point after not covering that.
Credibility lost.
If
they had any before that.
Jeez, man. Yeah. No wonder. Oh, no wonder no one believes the mainstream press at this point.
Oh, no.
You know, you can't articulate with enough fervor just how absurd the low confidence is in this stuff. And yet they continue as if that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
As if people just are like, oh, I mean, we're CNN, you know, we're just covering the news selectively, you know, I mean, like
we're covering the news we want to cover the way we want to cover it.
Yeah.
Not what you need to know.
Yeah. Especially leading into all the mandates. Like, think about it. Like, think it really, like, put yourself back there. Biden comes into office. It's the Trump vaccine. Then the two FDA officials are fired. The two top FDA officials are fired. And he does mention, he said left COVID. He meant left the CDC. But, you know, like, all of those things, you're looking at it and you're remembering that moment. And you're like, I am reliant on people to tell me what's going on. They're telling me I have to do this to go back to work or for my kid to go to school or all this stuff. And the only people look to are the press. And what's the press saying? They're not covering the fact that he just fired the lead people who the only people were objecting to COVID, to the COVID booster shots.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Crazy. Yeah. And speaking to the point about not being properly tested, how can it be properly tested if you unblind the study, if you vaccinate the control group before the study's complete?
I didn't know that was a thing.
They yeah.
Man.
Oh, absolutely. What? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, the long-term safety data wasn't supposed to come in until like 2025, six, seven. Well, I take that back. It was like vaccine came out in 21. It was supposed to be like 3 years, right? So I guess it would have been 2024. There was no way that they could, in good conscience, leave these people unprotected from COVID. So they vaccinated the control groups and completely destroyed any possible results that they could get from it. It's insane.
It's like the opposite of science. It's like the opposite. You gotta have a control group.
Yeah, but you gotta trust it.
You gotta trust it.
You gotta trust it.
Well, they're not doing that. They're doing religion. They're doing something else.
They're doing religion. It's exactly right.
All right. All right. We're running long, so I got one more. And because I promised it, we got to deliver on Pocahontas.
I got one after this, too.
Oh, you got one
we're
more?
Not, we're right. not running long. We're fine.
I'm having a great time.
Me too.
This is just so much fun. I just, you know what it is? It's cathartic. You know, after 4 years of just being like biting my tongue and being like, I don't trust any of this crap and this all feels wrong and just feeling like that pressure and then just to have it in a Senate and he's just laying it out like this and then fighting their ridiculousness like what we're about to see here. God damn it. I had it, but I was talking while I did this time.
Confirmed in this job.
You're going like this.
That is, you promised that you would not take away vaccines from anyone who wanted them. You just changed the classification of the COVID vaccine.
I'm not taking them away from people, Senator.
It takes it away if you can't get it from your pharmacist.
Well, most Americans are going to be able to get it from their pharmacy for free.
$100.
Most Americans will be able to get it from their pharmacy
for free. The question is, everyone who wants it, that was your promise.
I know I didn't. I never promised that I was going to recommend products with which there is no indication.
When you said.
And I know you've taken $855,000 from pharmaceutical companies, Senator.
Did you hold up a big sign saying that you were lying when you said that? Because you are the one who said you would not take them away. Now, Senator.
I'm not taking them away from anybody.
Secretary.
You want me to indicate a product for which there is no clinical data?
Senator,
is that what you want?
Secretary Kennedy, you said you wouldn't, and now you did.
I'm not taking them away. Everybody can get access to them.
No.
Oh, there's a deep, dark part of my soul that just really revels in this sort of thing.
Yeah, right. It's so delicious to watch it happen, get that pushback in real time, right?
I
then.
Know. And oh gosh,
especially he's like, look, people can still get them, but I'm not going to recommend them if they're not solidly supported by the science. Like, he's standing on the science.
Totally.
Now.
Well, and I think that's the real underlying piece here is that RFK Jr. is going about this in a very scientific way, right? And there's a clip I saw. We're not going to play it this time, but where he's talking to Representative Michael Bennett. I do have another clip I added in at the end.
Uh-huh, I got
where
it.
Where he's battling with him, where he basically talks about, you know, like Representative Bennett just clearly does not understand the way that studies are conducted, and he's like, actually, I think it might be a different guy, but he's saying. Are you going to publish the protocol for the study? Will you bring this protocol to this committee in so many days or a week or whatever? And he's like, well, I can't do that. You know, like, I'm not making up the protocol. It's not coming from us. It's coming from the scientists. And he's like, will you present it to the public in a month, to this committee in a month? Will you present it at all? Like, he's really just working his way down. Mm. And RFK is just saying repeatedly, it's like, the protocol is published and publicized to the public with the study. The protocol for the study is published with the study. It's so clear that this committee, many members on it, maybe all of them, I don't know, have so little understanding of the actual process of any of this that they're just really reading talking points. They're reading whatever their pharma lobbyists put in their hand to say to battle for sound bites. And they all look stupid doing it. Mm-hmm. They really do. So without further ado.
Make it transparent for the American people.
All the evidence is transparent.
Will all you make evidence. It in advance transparent the for the American people?
This is the clip.
They can all the evidence is transparent for the first time in history. And you were never there complaining when the pharmaceutical companies were picking those people and then running their products through with no safety.
You
testing.
Can make, you can characterize it any way you want. I quoted them today. What I said was accurate. What you said were lies. You described
Senator,
Are you saying that the mRNA
vaccine has never been associated with myocarditis or pericarditis in teenagers?
I am simply
Is that what you're trying to tell us?
I am simply trying to say that the people that you have put on that panel after firing the entire...
You're evading the question.
No, I'm asking the questions here,
You're
Mr. Kennedy.
You're evading that question.
I'm asking the questions,
Mr. Kennedy.
I'm asking the questions for Mr. Kennedy on behalf of parents and schools and teachers all over the United States of America who deserve so much better than your leadership. That's what this conversation is about,
Senator,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator, they deserve the truth, and that's what we're going to give them for the first time in the history of that agency.
Oof.
It's juicy.
Yeah, man.
It's
that juicy. Just something else.
Yeah.
So what he's saying is that, like, are you going to publish the data for your studies? And saying, like, we're the first ones to do that. What are you talking about? Of course.
Exactly. Instead of
that's
politicized
so crazy. It's so crazy because he's attacking him with his own, like, this is what I'm going to do that's different than the past. Like, mm-hmm. He never acquired that in the Biden administration. It's just like the Vassy thing in the Epstein files. It's like the Democrats have no shame in this. They don't care.
They don't. And I think that the American public sees it. Mm. Really. I mean, maybe not the dyed-in-the-wool blue Democrats. Maybe they're fully bought in still, and probably so. But the vast majority of the American public sees it. That's what gave Trump and Bobby Kennedy the mandate to do what they're doing with HHS right now. Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem to me like the Democrats really have a leg to stand on in this argument. They had their shot. Trump started the COVID era, but Biden carried out the entirety of, like, the aftermath of COVID and all the vaccinations and all the rounds of boosters and all the stuff. And we saw what that got us. And the data is devastating. Mm. And it's not getting better. And here we are with a new regime. And RFK is coming in and he's pulling the curtain back in a lot of ways. And that's terrifying to them because they know that the money that they get from their donors is on the line if they let this happen. And they're fighting tooth and nail. I mean, you saw that guy, Representative Bennett, shouting, breaking down, literally losing his shit.
Yeah.
With no basis, with no basis in truth. And it'll be even more juicy to watch all this unfold as Bobby Kennedy comes forward this month with his announcement of some sort of, you know, new data around the causes that they believe are behind the rise of autism in this country, a variety of other things. I mean, I think we're just going to continue to have blow after blow against the medical industrial complex that has been that has kept Americans under its thumb for 100 years. And I can't wait.
That is so awesome.
I can't wait.
You know, when COVID happened and I was watching things go through and I was like, well, the upside, I'm just looking for the silver lining. The silver lining's got to be at some point we're going to reform the FDA and the CDC because it was so crazily incompetent. I never forget when they were like, yeah, if you have ideas for medical treatments for this, send them in by fax because they couldn't receive it by email. They could, like, set up an email account to send it into. You had to send, like, the companies that were proposing, like, treatments and stuff like that was, like, you had to hand deliver a CD.
Why not put it on a floppy disk at that point?
Exactly. I just remember thinking, like, wow, okay, yeah. So, I mean, I knew it was bad.
Yeah.
But you get this, like, little glimpse, this little tiny sliver, and you're like, this system is so busted.
It is. And really quick, for our Gen Z audience out there, a CD is a round piece of plastic with data on it. And a floppy disk, we probably won't even go there. That's ancient history.
I mean, a fax. I mean, like, it fax. Is.
What the fuck is a fax? Go ahead and Google that. And while you're doing that, I'm sure I said a lot of things wrong. So go ahead and tell me in the comments all the things I'm wrong about, and we'll address it.
Absolutely. I'm just here for the fun, man. This is a crazy moment. I mean, the opportunity being that with the low institutional trust. Now, people are voting for Donald Trump because he will burn the institutions to the ground. That's what the anger's at. Right. And I just don't think the Democrats get that yet. You know, they can't be anti-establishment, especially these guys, because they've just been out, they're in the establishment, right? The Republicans can hide under Trump that are establishment. They can like use him and their support for him as a Republican as a shield. But these guys can't, right? Until they can figure that out or get some kind of figurehead that's actually anti-establishment in place, which is not AOC, which is not Bernie Sanders. You know, none of these people.
I don't think there's a true anti-establishment Democrat left. That I'm
Mimdani, right? You got this new guy comes out of nowhere that's become the focus for that reason, right? And you saw the 20 socialists and Patrick Ben David thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think there's something going on there, right? Like in the environment we're at, people fall back on their philosophy, right? Especially where the Democrats are at right now, where they're completely out of power and they just got shellacked like the way they have. The Republicans don't have a supermajority. They're not passing huge changes, right? The big, beautiful bill's the biggest one, right? Which is like corporate tax cuts, you know. But what happens when you're in that position is a lot of what happened to the Republicans when they were going into the Tea Party era, where it became very philosophical, mm-hmm. right? You're turning around, you're getting applause lines, so we're going to cut the budget. You couldn't do that right now. Not really. People would be like, well, what about Medicaid? You know, Republicans would say that.
Yeah, yeah.
So sure. We saw that in the OBB debate. So yeah, the Democrats are going through that phase now, and out of that, what I predict is you're going to see like a leftist figure gets very popular because they're an outside candidate and can actually feed on that fuel, that tinder, because it's there. It's there in a big way, and they're looking for a left wing expression of it.
Yeah. So what you're saying is it's not going to be Gavin Newsom.
He's too slick. He's too political.
He's way too slick.
Too much grounding in all like the basket case that's California. I don't even think the Democrats did California at this point, right? They can't make. They can't justify that stuff.
No, that's why they're all moving here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Importing their politics, unfortunately. All right, friends. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Definitely do leave us your comments. Let me know what I said wrong. If you want to join the conversation more in depth, jump into the Discord. Link's in the description below. For David Rand, I'm Joe Sheehan. This is Human Reaction. We'll see you in the next one.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com.